We get in fights, you know, still. And when you're married for a long time, fighting is just, it can happen. It's open 24 hours, basically, at any time. We got in a fight recently at 3 a.m. We woke up to get in this fight. We have a dog, and our dog, like, freaks out when it thunders. And so we have sedatives to give her because there's only so many times you can tell a dog it's just thunder before you're like, she's not getting it, you know. And you're like, just take this, all right? So I woke up. I had to wake my wife up, and I was like, hey, where are the sedatives at? And she was like, they're at the top of the cabinet. So I go get them. I looked at the bottle, and the bottle said they were expired. So I had to wake my wife back up, and I was like, hey, these say they're expired. And she was like annoyed. She was like, they're not expired, all right? They're new pills in an old pill bottle. And I was like, all right, I should have thought of that. You know, that's my fault. I mean, we have people come to our house all the time and they get milk and they're like, is this milk expired? And I have to go, that's new milk in an old milk jug. Are you the stupidest person I've ever met? Why would you not assume that's what it is? That's roughly what I told her. It wasn't as fun as that. But, and then she goes all in and tells me it doesn't matter because dog medicine can't even expire. Which I was like, you've never even heard a rumor about that. You don't know that. We don't know any dog medicine people. I know who she knows. We don't know one dog medicine maker that's texting her like, hey, we're doing some pretty big things at the dog medicine factory. I wanted to let you know first, but we've invented medicine that can't expire. So feel free to tell your husband at 3 a.m.
Oh, my word. You ever been there right there where you're having those kinds of arguments? Well, I tell you what, this weekend, we're going to take a look at perhaps one of the most important choices that you make in relationships. It's not just about falling in love, but it's not even really about staying in love. I mean, it contributes to that, but it's how do we enjoy staying in love? And so, really excited you're here with us this weekend. My name's Kurt. Again, if it's your first time in, we're certainly glad you're with us. Hope it's not your last time. To those of you tuning online, so good to have you join us from wherever you're tuning in from this weekend. We consider it a privilege that you would take a little time to be with us this weekend. Now, today I want to talk about this choice. Every couple makes this choice. Every single person makes this choice every single day. In fact, this is a decision you may or may not even be aware that you make every day. And sometimes it even feels a bit more like a reaction than a decision. And so the point of today is I really want to help you see this decision that you're already making, and perhaps how we can even make a better decision. And most people don't even know they have a decision to make in this realm. And so what is this decision that couples make day in, day out that actually makes all the difference? Well, the Apostle Paul, in the New Testament portion of the Bible, he writes this letter to Christians in the city known as Corinth. They were new Christians, and if you're newer to Crosspoint or new to Crosspoint or new to faith or kind of checking out church again, you haven't been around church for a while, we like the Apostle Paul around here, and so let me just tell you a little bit about him. He was a guy who actually wasn't into church, wasn't into God, wasn't into Jesus, and so if you're kind of like, yeah, I'm not sure about God, Jesus, or church myself, you ought to check out Paul because I think you might like him. He kind of does this about face where he has a change in mindset and he turns around and all of a sudden he leans into Jesus because he got new information and had a different experience and saw who Jesus really is. And so perhaps that's something as you kind of dig into Paul and his experience, you might have the same kind of experience. And so in this letter that Paul's writing, he's writing to these Christians, trying to kind of clarify the difference between all the religions that are going on and the gods in the community and this God that he's come to experience. Because there's a lot of misguided thoughts, a lot of misguided ideas. And he's like, you know, it's actually an entirely different God than I even thought existed. And so in this translation, as he's writing, in the English translation that we read, we kind of miss it sometimes, but he talks about pagans, which are people who basically just don't have a belief in God. And he's trying to convince them that, hey, this God actually does care for people. You know, most gods don't. Most gods just toy with people. They manipulate people. This is kind of strange, but legend have it. They even mate with people. I mean, think about that, a god mating with a human being. But Paul shows up in this culture, and he's like, all right, let me just tell you, the God that I've come to experience and see and discover is an entirely different God. He actually cares. He cares for our world. He cares for us. He cares for me. He cares for our environment. So Paul, he introduces this whole new idea that Jesus introduced not too long before of this idea of a horizontal spirituality. Because for many people, they just thought spirituality was a vertical thing. It was just me and God. And he's like, no. I mean, Jesus introduced this horizontal spirituality. It's not just how we interact with God, but it's also how we interact and love the people around us. In fact, Paul says, hey, this really is about how I want you to treat people the way that God, through Jesus, treated us. And we know this around here as this thing called the new command, or this platinum command, as we looked at a few weekends ago. Because see, the old way of religion was like, I only talk to God, and I use language to communicate with the gods of the wind, the gods of the sky, the rain, whatever God there is. I just want to speak the language of him or her or whatever it is. And yet Paul's like, no, there's a different kind of God. And if you want to just use language to communicate with God in a vertical way, like, knock yourself out doing that. But don't forget, the way you treat people is actually the number one manifestation of how much you actually love God and what God has called you to do in the world. In fact, this is one of the reasons I'm really excited about next weekend. I hope you'll return next weekend for our brand new series, People Skills, because as we've already said, man, figuring people out and figuring ourselves out and how we interact with people is a lot of work. And so we're going to take a look at how do we do that better? How do we understand ourselves better, understand others better? And we've got this amazing 6-week small group. In fact, our staff team just went through this early this spring, and it was transformational. It's changed the way we interact with our families, with the people we work with. And so we encourage you to consider jumping into one of these groups for this series called I Said This, You Heard That, because if you're like me, sometimes you say certain things and people hear you say other things. And this is all about how we lead others and love others well. So hope you'll be back next weekend for that. Now, for Paul, he writes this letter to these new Christians in Corinth, and many of you probably, if you're married, had this read at your wedding, all right? Or perhaps you've at least heard it. It's called the love chapter in some circles, but the Apostle Paul, when he wrote this, he was not writing like wedding literature, all right? Like, that wasn't his goal. This was earthy. It was gritty. He was giving people handles on how to love. We just kind of made it into, like, kind of fitting into weddings, but most of it makes sense except for this one little phrase in here. And it's this one little phrase we're going to look at, that in this we find the secret to this decision or this choice that leads to a love that lasts. So I'm going to kind of walk us through this passage, and then we're going to pause and kind of camp out on this one little phrase that makes all the difference. You guys ready? Ready to do this? All right, here we go. Here's what Paul says. He says, if I speak in the tongues of men or angels, but don't have love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. And so he just finished telling him, hey, there's all these gods, all these religions. You can speak the language of that god, this god. Even in the Christian language, religion, sometimes there's been certain language, spiritual language, speaking in tongues, that people are like, oh, I have a unique language to talk to God. It's not that that's not accurate. I mean, there's been a purpose for that in the world. But, you know, if you're interested in just communicating with God in that way, like, knock yourself out, you can go for that. But Paul's like, hey, just remember, that's not the main thing. In fact, he even says, if you even figure out the language of angels, but you don't have love, like, emulating out of your life, he's like, you're nothing more than a cacophony of sound and like a clanging cymbal, like an annoying cymbal. In other words, he's like, you're just going to be like pretty annoying is what you're going to be. He's like, we've all run into people, they're super spiritual, oh, I'm all about God, but man, they just don't treat people well. They're just kind of annoying, right? And this is always a good reminder to me, for people that do what I do, and maybe it's a good reminder for you as well, that, you should never judge somebody that does what I do, pastor, a speaker, a preacher, based on our speaking skills or our knowledge. Because see, speaking skills are like a talent. Like, that's something you can develop. And let me assure you, I've developed that over the years. I mean, I used to have horrible, horrible speaking skills. I mean, if you really want to know the kind of person I am, if you really want to know, like, the commitment I have to following Jesus and loving others, like, you got to ask my wife. You gotta ask my kids or some of my best friends, because you can develop a talent or ability, but that's not really a manifestation of faith. The way we love others is actually the defining measure. That's what Paul's saying. He goes on. He says, if I have the gift of prophecy, meaning I can foretell the future, or I can fathom all mysteries, meaning I have answers to all the questions that people have, or if I have knowledge, or if I have faith that can move mountains, if you have perfect faith, whatever that is, not fully sure what exactly that is, he says, but I do not have love. He says, I'm nothing. In other words, in the Greek text, Paul's saying, hey, if you're the smartest person in the room, if you can answer questions about spirituality that most people don't know about, but you don't have love, whatever it means to have love, he says, you're like a nobody. I mean, this is a great lesson right here, and I don't have much time to get off on a tangent here, but what he's kind of saying is knowledge does not necessarily equal deep. I mean, if you want to experience somebody that has a deep faith, a mature faith, a gravitas to their faith, It's not about knowledge or their, you know, whether they have, you know, a good amount of brass to stand up on certain issues or have certain convictions. It has nothing to do with that. He says it comes down to the way that you love, the way you're generous with people. And then he goes on, he says, if I give all I possess, it's like, who would do that, right? Like, he's talking way more than 10% or 20%. He says, even if I give everything I own to the poor and give over my body, like I'm finished giving my possessions, and now I'm going to start giving my time, my resources, my energy, and I have hardship that I may boast, but I don't have love, he says, I gain nothing. I mean, there's so much in that verse right there. And basically, this is kind of like a nail in the coffin on the whole prosperity theology, if you're familiar with that. And again, I don't really have time to get into that, but the whole summary of that is anybody who just gives to get something in return, he says, you're going to get nothing from God. All right? The purpose is not to give so I can get something back. But here's the question of kind of where he's going, and here's an interesting question. This little phrase, have love, what does that mean to have love? Because it sounds like something I would have internally, right? Like something, I have compassion for people. Oh God, I feel so much love for these people that are struggling, for these kids on the other side of the world. I have love. My heart aches for, you know, this couple that's struggling right here. But see, I don't think Paul's talking about just feeling something internal that we express vertically to God. He's actually talking about our love going horizontal, that it's very practical. He says, you know, when you have love, there's certain things that you do. It's not just something you celebrate internally. In fact, then he gives us examples. He says, love, the kind I'm talking about, it's actually patient. This is the put somebody else first principle like we've been talking about through this series. This is the let me get back in the end of the line again principle. He says, love is kind, or another way to say that is love defers. All right, I love the word defers. Love knows what I know, but it recognizes that you also know certain things too, and so I'm going to defer to you. I'm going to defer to you even if I think my way is best. That's love is kind. It says it does not envy. It isn't jealous. I mean, if you're more talented than me, if you know, maybe you're the life of the party, or when you get more attention than me, I'm not going to get jealous over that. It does not boast. I'm not going to one-up you. All right? I'm not going to be like, hey, that's a great story. Let me tell you my story now. All right? I'm going to let you shine. I'm not going to take the spotlight away from you. I'm going to let you be the center of attention. I'm not going to rob you from that moment. All right? Love doesn't envy. It is not proud. He goes on, he says, it does not dishonor others. In other words, love decides I'm not, if it's dishonoring of you, which is to diss someone's honor, then to kind of throw shade on their honor, I'm not going to do that. Even if I can't find a scripture, you know, anywhere in the Bible or in the New Testament or anywhere that says, hey, don't do this, if it's something that diminishes your integrity or diminishes, you know, what people think about you or dishonors you, I'm not going to do that. Because see, that's sin right there. Sin is not like some long list of things we do and don't do. Sin is when relationships are broken, when some kind of relational brokenness happens because somebody's violated someone. He says it's not self-seeking, which again is that whole move to the back of the line thing right here. He says it's not easily angered. Right? You should be approachable, not quick to anger. Now, there's appropriate times for anger. There's certain things that should bother us, but he says don't be quick to anger. And then here's a big one right here. It keeps no record of wrongs. And you're like, who can do that, right? Like, think about it for a moment. Wouldn't you love to be with someone who keeps no record of wrongs? And then he says something that's kind of tricky right here. And we're going to come back to this in a moment, but he says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. That's kind of out there. And then he just kind of goes rapid fire for a moment. He says, love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. He says, love always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. And one of these right here, if you pay attention to these right here, this is really interesting. When I was a kid, I was like, you know, one of these doesn't belong right here. And maybe it was the translation I used to read as a kid, but, you know, I can protect someone, right? I mean, if somebody needs protect, I can step in and protect them. I mean, if somebody needs hope, I mean, I can hope for them that maybe, you know, things turn and they have better days ahead of them. If they, you know, persevering, I mean, if somebody just needs some encouragement to, like, push forward, I can do that. But this one right here, always trust. I mean, think about that for a moment. That one is more dependent on the love-e than it is on the lover, right? Like, I'm going to always trust? like that's a bit naive, if we're honest, right? Like it's almost stupid. Like, I'm just going to blindly trust. I'm going to always trust them, right? Always trust. I mean, what the Greek equivalent is right here is this idea of always believing the best, always believing everything, which leads us back to this idea of trusting. And this right here is the keystone habit for couples that have learned how to make their love last. Now, before we get too deep into just talking about couples, I want us to think about it this way. I want you to just think about relationships in general, all right? Every relationship, all right? Not just romantic relationships, not just if you're married or engaged or dating, but every relationship from time to time, there are certain things that we have certain expectations on, right? I mean, we expect certain things. Now, we might say, okay, you said you'd be home at 6 and you weren't, or you said you have dinner ready when I got home, or I don't know why she said she'd pay the bill, or why he said he'd take care of it and he didn't. We have certain expectations, all right? And then at the other end, there's certain things that we experience, all right? And every single time that we have expectations and then we have and then we go through life and we experience, we don't even realize this, but we fill in the gap right here between the two of these with a decision. There's a decision we make every single time. And sometimes we almost feel like we're responding. We don't even realize it's a decision. But every single time when there's a gap between our expectations, she said she'd do this, he said he'd do that, but it kind of panned out differently. There's a gap in the middle. All right, and when things don't line up, whenever there's a difference between our expectations and our experiences, we either choose to believe the best. All right, I don't know why they did that. I'm not exactly sure why she's late. I'm not sure why the bill didn't get paid. I mean, I'm sure that when I get a chance to talk to him, when I get a chance to talk to her, there's gonna be a good explanation. I just don't know what it is yet, but once I get the information, I'm sure it will make total sense. Or we assume the worst. There she goes. He did it again. You know, that's kind of what I expected. And so again, couples that have learned the key to a love that lasts, they make it a habit to choose to believe the best. Now, let me just give you a little story on this. And this is about the clearest story that Julia and I have had a lot of these moments. But back when our kids were very young, when we had only two, they were 4 and 2, my wife was job sharing, meaning she was sharing a classroom with another teacher so she could have some time at home with our kids. And she didn't work Fridays, I didn't work Fridays, we didn't have childcare on Fridays. And one particular Friday, her coworker said, hey, can you work for me so I can have the day off with my kids? So my wife said, hey, I'd love to do that. Kurt, could you take care of the kids on Friday for us? I said, absolutely, I will make sure they're taken care of. And so she's like, great. She went and helped her teammate out, worked for that day. I had plans. It was the month of May. It was Fast Friday down at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. I'm like, I just called our sitter. I said, hey, Vicky, listen, Julie's got to work. I've got plans. Could you take our kids for the day? She's like, no problem. Just bring them over for the day. So that's what we did. She went and was able to do what she wanted to do. I went down with my friends to the track. Later in the afternoon, she's on her way home from work. I start heading home from the track and she calls, says, hey, what are we doing for dinner? What's our plans tonight? I said, I'm not sure. I'll be home in about an hour after they get the kids. And she says, what do you mean you get the kids? I thought I asked you to take care of the kids today. I said, oh, they're being taken care of. She said, yeah, but I thought you were going to take care of them. And so all of a sudden, there was a gap between her expectations and what she is experiencing. I thought, well, I didn't understand it that way. Here was what I thought you meant. And again, there's a gap between what I thought and what we were experiencing. So the question is, how do we fill in the gap? Are we able, in those moments, to believe the best? Because see, there's a choice, and sometimes we feel like we don't have a choice. You're gonna hear me say this 10 more times at least over the course of our time together. I want you to realize you have a choice to make every single time there's a gap. You make a choice of how you fill in the gap. All right, he didn't come through, she didn't come through, she was late again, where is he at? I thought this is what he was gonna do, I thought he was gonna take care of the kids. Now, you know, I mean, whatever the situation is, there's a gap and we make a choice. And couples that have figured this out, they have discovered that when they believe the best, it just puts them in amazing places. Now, this is a keystone habit. This is a relationship-changing habit right here. Now, The cool thing is this is what the Apostle Paul taught us over 2,000 years ago. Now, what's really kind of cool to me is just a few years ago, there was a guy who was a writer, author, speaker, a guy by the name of Marcus Buckingham. You may know him from his book, Now Discover Your Strengths, on Strength Finders. He wrote a book later called One Thing You Need to Know. This is a business book, business organization, leadership. And in this book, he illustrates, he tells an illustration to kind of illustrate his point, which actually makes our point that we're talking about right here. Because he references a study that was done on couples over 20 years, cross-generational, cross-cultural, studying happy couples, couples that were happy. And so they did a study for 20 years on happy couples looking for what are the common denominators that have allowed them to have a love that lasts. And when I say happy couples, I'm talking couples that have gone the distance. There's a certain time frame that they had to have been together, and then they had to still enjoy being together, not like grunting it out, right? Not like, hey, we don't have enough money to get divorced, so we're gonna stay in it for the kids, and we're just getting by. No, these were couples who actually enjoyed each other. And so they asked them questions. They're trying to figure out, okay, what are the common denominators in these couples that have allowed them to make it and still enjoy being together? And so the researchers, you know, when they went in to do their research, as all researchers do, they had some assumptions on what they thought the results would be. And so their kind of general idea was the couples that have made it, that have gone the distance, still enjoy being together, even though they've had some bumps in the road, they still love being together, and they assumed that at some point through the course of their relationship, they kind of downgraded the expectations for the other spouse, whether that was their motives or expected less out of their character or perhaps even their virtue. And so over time, you know, what started is, oh my gosh, my husband's amazing. My wife is absolutely amazing. Over time, they began to lower their expectations into a more realistic view of their partner or their spouse so that they wouldn't be disappointed and they could actually continue to enjoy being together. What was so fascinating, though, was that the research actually showed the opposite. And so they asked lots and lots of questions. And each partner had the chance to respond and rate their spouse and vice versa. And consistently, this is so amazing to me, think about this. Consistently, happy couples rated the other spouse more positively on nearly every quality than they rated themselves. Meaning they gave their partner higher scores on nearly every quality than they gave themselves. And they had what was called this unrealistic positive view of the other person they were with. In fact, kind of the summation of the study was apparently love actually is blind. It's blind. It causes us to not see the deficiencies in our spouse. And then they went on to kind of give this description. They said this positive view, this kind of almost love is blind view of their spouse, it actually created something. It created this upward spiral of love. And you're like, what the heck is an upward spiral of love? Sounds kind of weird, right? Well, I'm going to show you what it was. They described it. This is what it was because I think this would be good for us all to know. They said, this is what it looked like. They had this illusion. She's amazing. He is one of the most amazing human beings I've ever met. And that, them believing that ongoing actually caused them to lean into that and to live as if that was true. And so that illusion that they're amazing actually created a conviction. And that conviction actually led to a security. Oh my gosh, they're one of the most amazing people in my life. I feel very secure with them. And that security fostered intimacy, because what is intimacy? Intimacy is to know someone and to be known. And so when somebody felt immensely secure in this relationship, and not only were they known, but they fully knew the other, they're like, I'm fully free to give myself to you and to experience the depths of intimacy, physically, sexually, relationally, spiritually. And then this intimacy actually fostered love. And you know what the love did? The love actually led to more illusion that, oh my gosh, my spouse is amazing, which fed to the conviction of security, which fostered more intimacy, which just created more love. And they said it just created this upward spiral of love. And this is data-driven. Think about this. Here was the recommendation. This was absolutely fascinating to me. They said, find the most, and I love this phrase right here, find the most generous explanation for each other's behavior and believe it. When there's a gap between what you expect and what actually you experience, when there's a gap between the two, just whatever you need to do, come up with the most generous explanation for the other person's behavior and just believe it. Because love actually believes all things. Love believes the best. Now, there are always things that are going to make this challenging, right? I mean, listen, I'm not naive enough to think that, oh, this just, you know, the couples have no problems. No, listen, I've been doing this for a lot of years. I've walked alongside a lot of couples. I've walked through things with couples that you would go, oh my gosh, I can't believe that actually happened. I'm not naive. I realize there are obstacles to this, but regardless of the obstacles, and we're going to look at two of them in just a moment, but regardless of those, I don't want you to miss this point right here, that every single time there's a gap, every single time there's a gap between what you expected or what he said or what you thought was going to happen or what you actually experienced, you decide what you place here. Do you believe the best or do you assume the worst? Whichever way you go, I just want you to know, this is a very conscious decision we make. All right, I don't want you to miss that. Now, let's talk about the obstacles for a moment. All right, there's some obstacles. Here's just two to start with. Number one is what we experience. He let me down, she let me down, he did it again, it keeps happening. I mean, we experience certain things and it begins to inform our posture, all right? It's just a normal experience. The second thing is who we are. See, we don't come into our relationships with an empty slate, do we? I mean, we carry all of our baggage, all of our stuff from our childhood, our daddy issues, our mommy issues, our sibling issues, our friend issues, our boyfriend issues. Listen, I told my kids a couple nights ago, I said, kids, I want you taking notes this weekend. None of them are in a relationship that at least right now I believe is going to lead to them getting engaged and married. But I said, I want you taking notes because the way that you fill in the gap right now when your expectations with your siblings, with your parents, with your friends don't exactly go the way you want, the way you as a student fill in the gap, if you either assume the worst or you believe the best, this will shape how you handle your relationships that really are even much more significant in the future. See, some of us have a hard time trusting because of our history and our baggage and our mommy issues, our daddy issues, our fear of insecurity. And there's certain behaviors even that will trigger certain responses in us because of what we've experienced and who we are. We can't help that. But here's what I want you to hear. Even with all the junk and baggage we bring, all right, with all the inconsistency of the person I'm with, and she said she'd do this and she didn't, and he said he'd come through and he didn't, even in the midst of all that, we still have a choice. Are we going to assume the worst or believe the best? Now, with that as a backdrop, I want to circle back around to these couple of verses in 1 Corinthians 13 that we kind of blew by real quickly. All right, because these help us lean into this principle right here. So check this out. Paul says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices whenever truth wins out. What does that mean? You know what that means? That means I'm not trying to catch the other person. I'm not trying to catch the other person doing something wrong. I'm not trying to build a case. Well, you did this, then you did that, and then this kind of tipped it over. And so all of this kind of, I'm not building a case. I'm actually not keeping score. Love always protects. Well, what is love protecting? You know what it's protecting? It's protecting the trust in the relationship. It always protects from a lack of trust. You know, what I choose to put in this gap will impact the relationship right here. All right, this always happens. She always does that. He always does that. Whatever I choose to put in the gap, whichever way I go, this will dictate the relationship as much as the inconsistency of the other person. All right, so love always protects. It always trusts. It looks for a generous explanation. If it needs to come up with one, it takes the time to be as generous in the explanation as possible. And then he says, love always hopes. Love that. You know what that means? That means love trends positive. I'm not going to just let my mind always go to the negative. I'm going to trend positive. And then he gets real realistic. He says, love always perseveres. Love this. You know what that implies? That implies that there is resistance. There may be some doubt. There may be moments where I'm like, gosh, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be easy for me to go negative on this right now. Love decides I'm going to persevere. I'm going to push through that, and I'm going to try to find a way to come up with a generous explanation. I'm not going to set the other person up for a trap and just wait for them to step into it. Love is determined to trust anyway. And so here's the question. Here's the question I want us to all think through. Based on your personality, based on your experiences, based on your past, based on your baggage, based on what you know about yourself, do you believe the best or do you naturally assume the worst? Which way do you go? Because regardless of who you're with in a relationship, he always does this. She never comes through. Regardless of who you're with, this is a choice that you make every single time. It's a choice I make every single time. And Marcus Buckingham, he gave us the example. And the Apostle Paul told us over 2,000 years ago that happy couples, couples who have figured this out, they realize there's a choice they make every single time. But Kurt, if you just knew what he had done, I'm sure. Kurt, if I could just tell you stories of how bad she's been and how little she actually comes to, I know, I get it. There's still a choice in this. And as you think about this, like, what are the other options anyway? Have you ever thought about it that way? Like, what's like plan B? Or what are the B-level options? I can just continue to delight in uncovering mistakes. Let me set some traps, see if I can catch you. Thrive on speculation. Boy, I'm not sure. That keeps everybody walking on eggshells all the time. Assume the worst. Well, every time something happens, I'm always going to assume the worst, which that actually puts the relationship in a deficit. Or I can embrace doubt. I can just live out of doubt all the time. See, there's always going to be gaps, but we get to decide. And what I can tell you is couples that have figured this out, they will tell you, you always come out on the upside when you choose to believe the best. So, here's our homework for this week. You guys ready for homework? All right, here's your homework. Here's what I want you to do. If you're coupled right now, I want to ask you, this is one of your next steps this week, by the way, as well. But I really just want you to decide right now. I want you to consider, for the next 7 days from right now, would you decide that regardless of what happens with the person I'm coupled with, I'm going to believe the best? I'm going to do the work, even if it takes me a while to come up with a generous explanation. Will you just decide right now for the next 7 days, I'm going to believe the best? And if you're a student, again, this is something I've challenged my kids with. If you're single in the room, if you're single again, if you're a young adult, if you're a student, high school, college, junior high, I encourage you to do this with your family, with your siblings, with your parents, with your friends. Will you practice when there's expectations that don't get met, somebody said, hey, I'm gonna do this, and they don't necessarily pan out that way, and you have a different experience, will you choose this week, just for 7 days, will you choose, say, you know what, I'm gonna come up with a generous explanation. Before I get upset and assume the worst, I'm gonna come up with a generous explanation. I'm just gonna choose to believe it. Even if they drop the ball 9 times out of 10, on the 10th one, I'm still gonna believe the best. I'm gonna trust anyway. I'm gonna take whatever time I need to come up with a generous explanation. And I'm gonna trust. You do that this week. I guarantee you, you will probably experience something that perhaps you will never experience otherwise. Are you willing to say, okay, I'm gonna believe the best? Now, does this mean you don't have difficult conversations? No, not at all. If somebody lets you down 5 times in a row, 3 times in a row, 10 times in a row, that requires a difficult conversation. Hey, this is how that made me feel. Here's how you kind of violated me. Here's how I feel like this deteriorating our relationship. You have the conversation, but after you finish the conversation, you know what you do? You clear the scorebook. You don't keep score. And even if there was no good reason for the last 10 times, when the 11th time happens, you know what you do? You say, okay, I'm gonna believe the best. I'm gonna come up with a generous explanation. Because this is what happy couples have discovered is the secret to a love that lasts. The secret to not only being together, but like enjoying, loving being together. It's a choice every single day. So that's the challenge. You guys up for the challenge? I hope you are. Man, I think this is gonna change. It's gonna change our relationships. Let's go ahead and stand. I wanna pray for us. Heavenly Father, thank you for, man, this amazing picture that the Apostle Paul gives us of what it means to love. And how it's patient, kind, and protects, and trusts, and doesn't dishonor. And God, I just pray that you help us to know what to do with what we've heard and how to apply it to our relationships this week. And for those of us who are up for the challenge, God, just remind us every single day that we're gonna believe the best. We're gonna do whatever it takes to believe the best this week. Even when things don't go the way we plan, I'm gonna do whatever I can to get in a mindset where I'm gonna believe the best. And for some of us, for those of us who have a faith, who have a relationship with you, Jesus, we know this is what you have done with us. And for those of us who are exploring you, trying to figure out if we can put the weight of our life into who you are, perhaps as we put this into practice this week, we'll actually get a glimpse and a feeling of what it feels like to be on the other side of you who believes the best in us. And perhaps that might even draw us a step closer to you. So God, I just pray that you'd help us to do this. Help us to actively, horizontally love well this week, to be generous in the way that we love, because you've been generous with us. And we know that when that happens, God, when that happens, amazing, tremendously amazing things begin to take place. And that's what we want. So we just thank you. We pray these things and ask these things in your name and character, Jesus.